IllbeHonest.com.
He not only identifies us in being made like us in every respect, but God in inspired language shows us that Jesus regards us as brothers, part of the same family. Therefore, He had to be made like His brothers in every respect so that He might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. And right at this point in time, I am not going to belabor the high priesthood of Christ simply because Hebrews does that and we have a lot of high priesthood to look at. But we do want to pick up on one of the aspects of this high priestliness of Christ today. Here's where I want you to specifically pay attention. There isn't a child of God in this place that is not going to be able to relate to and find help in this verse. In this verse, I'm hoping God will use me to help you be profited from the verse, but there's help in this verse whether I'm able to give it to you or not. But here it is, verse 18. This is really the heart of what I want to deal with today. For because He Himself has suffered when tempted, He is able to help those who are being tempted. Now listen to this. Because He did this, therefore, He is able to help those who are being tempted. I've called my message this morning, Jesus really is able to help you through temptation. And I put focus, I put emphasis on the really is. Jesus really is. Because I have a feeling there's a lot of times when you're in trial, you're suffering, you're under affliction. If somebody read that verse to you, you would say, I don't feel helped. Scott talked about waiting on the Lord today. You know, there's a lot of times when you're waiting on the Lord, it doesn't feel like God is helping you. There are times we feel tempted and we cry out for help and we don't feel like help comes. That's not saying whether it actually does or not. It doesn't feel like it, right? Has anybody ever been there? Anybody ever been in a place in the Christian life where you felt like you were under such temptation and you cried out for help and you actually fell? It was like, He didn't come and help me. I earnestly wanted help, but He didn't help me. Or at least, it didn't appear that He did. Listen, dark seasons in the Christian life are not uncommon to the experience of the child of God. I want to ask you a question. Who was it that said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Who? Well, if you say Jesus, that's right. Matthew 27:46, Jesus cries out those very words on the cross. But if you said another name, like what name? David, you would be right as well. Right? Psalm 22, David, in a very foreshadowing and prophetic sense, speaks these words, which the true David, centuries later, would repeat as he hung on the cross. Let me ask you this question. Did God actually forsake Jesus Christ? Yes. Utterly forsook. But this, did God forsake David? Are you sure? David thinks so. Diego's sure. Listen to the fuller account as we get it from David's lips. Don't turn there, but listen to it. Psalm 21, verses 1 and 2. To the choir master, according to the doe of the dawn. Don't you love that? A psalm of David. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? From the words of my groaning. Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. And by night, but I find no rest. What's this? Did God really forsake David? I can tell you this, David thought so, or it felt like it. But the answer, of course, is no. And how do I know that? How do I know God never, ever actually forsook David? Well, by David's own words. As an old man, David spoke these words. Scott was in Psalm 37 this morning, weren't you? In Psalm 37, David says he's old. Listen, 37:25, I've been young and now am old. And he says this, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken. And a few verses later, verse 28, he says, for the Lord loves justice, he will not forsake his saints. David, what's this? How can you say this? He won't forsake his saints. He won't forsake the righteous. You've never seen the righteous forsaken. You are a saint. You are one of the righteous. And here you are saying he never forsakes, but back there in your younger years, you said that he had forsaken you. My God, why have you forsaken? What David realized in his older life, as he looked back across his own life, as he looked across the vast landscape of the saints of God, he saw in reality, none of God's children are ever forsaken. But by his own experience, he recognized this. There are seasons when it feels like we have been forsaken. There are seasons... Are there not, brethren? Is there anybody here that's been a Christian any amount of time that cannot identify with Psalm 22? My God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. Lord, why are you so far from saving me? Why are you so far from the words of my groaning? You ever been there? The words of your groaning, the words of your sighing, the words of your distress. Lord, I'm calling on you, but I don't get an answer. Soul darkness. That's a reality. Brethren, though God never truly leaves his people, there are hours of darkness and loneliness and feeling forsaken, the feeling we desperately need help, yet no sense of the help comes. And hey, are those feelings real? They're very real. They are definitely real. They're not a figment of our imagination. It's not like you can say to a brother if he comes to you and he says, I feel such darkness. I'm calling upon the Lord and I don't feel any sense of help. You can't look at him and say, well, that's not true. You do sense help. No, it might be true to say, no, there actually is help. But it's not true to say you don't sense your need of help. You don't sense a sense of forsakenness. Because the truth is, we do get into seasons of our life where we feel just like that. My objective this morning is this. I look at this text. I look at Hebrews 2:18, and I find this. Jesus is able to help those who are being tempted. And what I find here is a promise for help. But I realize dark seasons come. Brethren, I don't know how it is for you. But the absence of Christ in my Christian experience is one of the most trying trials. There's reality to that. There's an emptiness. There is a sorrow. Brethren, we can be in hard places, but if Christ is smiling and we feel a sense of that smile, it can be heaven on earth, even in the midst of suffering. But when He withdraws, it's a sorrow that only His children know. But here it is. You're in that place. Scott was talking about waiting on the Lord. You know what happens while you're waiting? Thoughts are going through your head. We're always thinking creatures. The devil, he's a slanderer. He's always out there somewhere lurking, breathing his slanderous thoughts at us. And as we're waiting, how is it with you? We're waiting and there's these seasons where it feels like we're suffering and we don't find help. We feel like we're swallowed up in darkness. And as we look around, you know what we see? You know what occurs to us? Lord, I don't see anybody else suffering like this. So we feel alone. Lord, I cry and you're not coming. We feel abandoned. Satan is saying, yeah, that's a nice master you have. I don't do this to my servants. Look what he does to you. Look what he puts you through. And so we're tempted with these hard thoughts of God. And I'll tell you, a lot of times in the midst of it, it's like, where's the help? Where is the help? You show me a verse like this, because he has suffered this way, he's been tempted this way, he's able to help those who are being tempted. How do I draw help from that verse? That's what I want us to look at. That's what I want us to think about. Think about these. You know what happens while you're waiting? The temptation while you're waiting under suffering is to say, if this is the way he's going to treat me, I'm out of here. And brethren, lest you forget the context, we're in the book of Hebrews. And that's exactly the kind of thing we've got going. We've got people that are in danger of drifting away. Why are they in danger? Because they're suffering. These are people that are weary with their suffering. They have suffered persecution. They have been under this suffering. They are grown weary through this suffering. They got arms that hang down. They've got weak knees. They've got feet that are out of the way. These are people who have been beat up for their faith. They've been persecuted for their faith. And you know what's happening the whole time? They've got their Jewish relatives, their Jewish whoever, co-workers and everything. Look at this. You've gone off and followed this Jesus. You need to come back and follow Moses like we are. Come back to us. You know, look at all your suffering. And he's not, your Jesus isn't helping you. You're still suffering. And you know, you look at that, and there's a temptation, is there not? There's a temptation to complain. There's a temptation to think that our God's doing us wrong. Our God's a hard taskmaster. There's a temptation to seek sin as a way out of the suffering. Just look, all you got to do is not associate with Christ anymore and it gets a whole lot easier. Yeah, that's right. Why isn't he helping me? He's not helping me. Maybe I should just help myself. Maybe just like we heard in the Sunday school hour, maybe we figure this out for ourselves. Maybe we march up there into the land of Canaan when God hasn't told us to go and we're going to fix this whole thing ourselves. You see, that's the temptation. We're just going to work it out. But listen, you know what this text says? He is able. Oh, there are several different Greek words translated able. This is the one, dunamai. It comes from a word group from which we get dynamite. Your brother, named after. Dynamite, dynamic, dynamo. He is able because there's a power. And listen, where does the power come from? Clearly, if this text means anything, it means that the power is not simply coming from Jesus because he's powerful. It's coming from Jesus, because Jesus' emotions and sensitivity and affection for his people is so strong that it forces powerful responses to our suffering. Because he so feels for us, he is compelled. It is a power based on the emotion of Christ himself. That means nothing. And when we get over to 4, you see it. It comes out with the word sympathy over there. There is sympathy. He can identify. That is what's going on here. That is where the, because this happens, therefore his ability flows out of that. Because Jesus himself has suffered and been where we are, therefore when we're in need of help, Jesus just, he can't just ignore us. He feels, he looks, he hears our cry. I feel the word pathetically, but so often today that doesn't have that sense of pathos like it originally did. But as he quivered there in the garden, brethren, it says that during the days of his life on this earth, he cried out with tears. He was a man that when he came under the sufferings of this life, sometimes we have this idea about Jesus that he just came up against suffering and unmoved, he just went right through it. That is not the case. He became like us. He did not like pain. He quivered under it. He sweat blood under it. He did not, Father, remove it if it's possible. There was nothing in his humanity that looked forward to that. You have to understand that. The only thing that pulled Jesus through that suffering was his commitment to do the will of God that was stronger than his commitment to avoid suffering. But you better believe it. He was committed to avoiding suffering, or else he would not have asked to been delivered from those things. He would not have responded the way he did with such feeling, with such emotion. But behold, I have come to do thy will, O God. That always trumped in the life of Christ. Now here it is. I want us to look at the text here, and I want us to unpack this a little bit. For because he himself has suffered when tempted. That's the way the ESV reads. Now just at surface value, surface reading, this sounds like temptation causes suffering. Right? Doesn't that sound like temptation? We get tempted. Jesus was tempted, and the temptation caused him to suffer. I probably would not have thought over much about this, except as I was perusing one of my commentaries on Hebrews by a man named Peter O'Brien. He made this observation. Listen to it. I want to quote what he says about this very portion of Scripture. This suffering was the source of temptation. Now that's exactly the opposite of what it sounds like it says. And I said, really? He's saying the opposite of what it sounds like my ESV says. He goes on to say this. Hebrews is not here saying that Christ suffered through his temptations, however true this may be. Rather, his suffering was the source of temptation for him. And because he has been tested to the limit and remained faithful, he is perfectly qualified to help those who are tempted. Well, after reading that, I went to the original. And sure enough, you know what I found? Suffered is the primary verb. Temptation is a participle. It modifies it. It flows from it. The suffering is the main thing. And the temptation comes out of that. Listen, the New American Standard, the translators of the New American Standard picked up on this. Listen to how they translate this. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. So why am I making such a big deal about this? The reason is, I believe we need to understand this. We need to understand how suffering works. Brethren, I don't doubt that when Jesus was tempted, it may have produced some sort of suffering. But the way Jesus was perfected, the way that he learned obedience by what he suffered, was just this way. When he suffered, obedience, the path of obedience, required him to walk that way in the suffering. The temptation was always to steer out of it. Listen, you may not recognize this. It's taken me almost 2 decades to probably come to a much fuller understanding of what actually went on in those days when Jesus Christ was tempted by the devil. As a young believer, I didn't understand. Well, you know, you read, throw yourself off the pinnacle of the temple. How's that a temptation? But I'll tell you, brethren, suffering is the point in your life where you are weakest. Always. And you know what I believe? I believe the devil touched Jesus in 3 areas where he was suffering the greatest. Because that's where he knew he was weakest. You say, explain. 1, he had fasted for 40 days. Listen, do you think it's suffering to fast 40 days? Fast 3. I'm serious. If you don't think going without food doesn't create suffering, it creates... What, brethren, suffering. Suffering is when we get in a situation in life we don't like. Temptation is when we are being enticed by sinful ways to avoid that suffering. I'm not talking about when you have malaria and somebody offers you quinine as a way out of that suffering. There are lawful ways. Didn't Jesus say, if you're being persecuted in one town, do what? Flee to the next. There are lawful ways to avoid suffering. But brethren, where temptation really comes is when we are suffering and we have used all of the lawful means to escape it, and God has not purposed for any of those means to lead us out of it. Then the temptation is, use means God has not prescribed. Jesus said, behold, I have come to do your will. And the Father says, I will have you suffer hunger in the wilderness until I send my angels to feed you. And the devil comes in right and touches him right there and says, turn the stone into bread. And Jesus is not going to alleviate his suffering until his Father sends him aid. He is not. He came as a servant to do the will of the Father, not to do his own will. That's where the point of temptation was. You say, how does bowing down and he'll give him all the kingdoms of the world? Brethren, when I read the scriptures, I find early on, Jesus said to his disciples one day, I have a cup to drink. And he says, until I drink it, he says, I'm distressed. Brethren, the thought of the cross, the foreshadowings of the cross in his own mind, they no doubt came to a head in the Garden of Gethsemane where it caused such anguish that he sweat blood. But you find, even as you back away from that, Jesus was saying, I'm under distress. I'm distressed until this thing is dealt with. I feel it. I feel the weight of this. He was being torn by these realities. They were pulling on him. He said in John 12:27, his soul was troubled. In Luke 12, he said, great is my distress. In Matthew 26, he says, I'm sorrowful unto death. Brethren, I'll tell you this. What we see there in chapter 1 of Hebrews, Jesus Christ had to make purification of sins. Then he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. Then was he granted to be heir of all things. To become heir of all things, there was a price to pay. And what the devil did is he comes in here and he says, Jesus, these kingdoms, they're mine to give you. You don't have to go the way of the cross. There's an easier way. Bow down, I give them to you. I'll make you heir. There was temptation there, brethren, that would have been strong. How about this? Throw yourself off the pinnacle. You say, what's that? Brethren, just have a friend turn on you. Just have people reject you. Have people mock you. Have people call your name, call you names. There is something within us as human beings. We do not like to be rejected. We do not like to be hated. We do not like to be persecuted. Do you know what it says? Jesus came to His own and His own did not receive Him. Can you imagine if you are like the world's greatest black belt? You basically are the most lethal human being alive on the face of the earth. And suddenly you're in a situation where people start attacking you and you don't fight back. You don't do anything. There is a temptation inside to say, do you know who I am? There is a temptation inside when we are despised, when we are reproached, when we are rejected. If we actually have honor, if we actually are somebody, there is a temptation to say, do you know who I am? You better believe Jesus felt that. What the devil is doing here is he's saying, look at all of them. They're rejecting you. The Jewish leaders, you came to your own. Jesus, if you just throw yourself off the pinnacle of the temple, right here in the midst of front of all the crowds gathered at the temple, and suddenly God's angels appear and they all grab you and pick you up, everybody's going to see who you are. Everybody's going to see your glory. Everybody's going to see that the angels, they are there to serve you. You are head of the angels. You are Lord of the angels. It's basically, you know what he's tempting to do? Be Superman. Show yourself off. Huge temptation. Men have a real difficulty when they are somebody and they're in a situation where they're not recognized to want to be recognized. Jesus felt these things. Brethren, somebody's going to come along and say, yeah, but because he didn't have any sin, he can't really feel. No. The fact is, he was made in every respect like us, and he feels all of them. You say, you know, I suffer things like, you fill in the blank. What do you suffer with? You say, unfulfilled sexual desires. I want to be married. You say, Jesus never struggled with that. Why would you say that? Jesus was a man. He came like us. He came with desires like us. He came in every respect like us. Jesus longed for friends. Jesus longed for company. Jesus longed for intimacy, undoubtedly. I don't want to ascribe to anything to him that is ungodly, but everything that is common to us by way of the way God made us in his image, when he said, it is good, it was in Christ. And the thing is, because he had no sin, doesn't make his temptation unreal. It makes it more real. You say, how? Because Jesus has felt every temptation deeper than we have. You say, how so? For instance, look, if you are suffering with unfulfilled sexual gratification, and you're under that burden, and you're being tempted, and you give place to some sort of sexual immorality, you know what you've just done? You have sought to alleviate your suffering by sin. And that's what temptation is. Whereas he who withstands beyond that point endures more, right? You caved right there. You suffered up to this point and you gave place. You took the edge off your suffering by succumbing to an unrighteous path. Whereas he who doesn't succumb at that point, he suffers beyond that. He goes to another extremity. He suffers to a greater fullness. You see, what happened is his obedience was tested. He never picked the way of sin. He never chose that. He never went that way. Never. He never did that. Never picked the path of sin. Brethren, the thing we need to remember too is the temptation to Christ may have been greater in this sense. You get cancer. You suffer. You use all the means to get rid of it. It's not taken away. You know what? You're in a situation where you're forced to suffer. Jesus had the power to turn that stone into bread, and the devil knew it. You know what? Jesus was in a situation, was he not? Did he not tell his disciples at one point, I could call down a legion of angels right now? Jesus was in a position to alleviate his suffering at any given point. All of it. He had the power. I say there's even more trial. There's even more temptation. Brethren, it's not much of a... there's a temptation as to whether we're going to complain and grumble, no doubt. But when you're actually in a situation where every temptation you're confronted with, you have the power to get yourself out, that makes it, I think, a greater temptation. Brethren, I want you to think with me here. Look with me. It's not far away. Hebrews 5, verse 7. In the days of His flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears. Do you read across that not knowing what to do with it? Brethren, I'll tell you what's going on. The writer of Hebrews says things all through this book that seem to come back to this reality that Jesus can relate with us. Like when he says, Jesus the same yesterday, today, and forever, he's saying he doesn't change. Or how about when he says something like this in Hebrews 12, you have not yet resisted sin to the shedding of blood. What does he mean by that? Where's he even going with that? Right before that, he said, consider Jesus. You know what's true of Jesus? He suffered the same sufferings that are common to mankind. And he stayed committed to the path of obedience, even to death. By shedding of blood, he doesn't just mean you may have gotten beat up, you may have been persecuted, and you had a little blood run down your face. He's talking about you have not yet resisted sin to the point of giving your life. Because they were still alive. He knew they hadn't. Whereas Jesus had. Jesus went all the way. And you say, Look, if you've got this idea that approaching death was not something that Jesus felt in the innermost parts, what do you do with this verse here in Hebrews 5? What do you do with that? Why does it say he that was able to save him from death? You know what I do with this verse? Because it has to do with his... I don't think this is just talking about at the end of his life, like there in the garden when he pleaded with the Father. This seems to indicate in the days of his flesh, during his life. You know what? Did Jesus know that they were plotting to take his life? See, I think this is a part of Jesus you don't typically think about. What we see, they wanted to kill Jesus, and he passed through the midst of them. Whoa, glorious. It's amazing. You know what a verse like this gives us a picture into? That night he walked out on the hillsides and on his face before his Father with desperate pleas and cries and tears. He didn't want to die. Father, help me, save me, protect me. Is that not the picture you get? In the days of his flesh, not just the last day, in the days. He was one who would come out before his Father, and the same things you and I struggle with, he would just plead, he would cry, Lord, help me. And I'll tell you what, he felt. Jesus is one who recoiled and trembled at these persecutions and the possibility of death and the possibility of having the cup pressed to his own lips. And he pleaded, deliver me. Even up to the end, he was praying, deliver me. He's showing us, brethren, this does not show us a weakness any different than the weakness found in all of man. But his strength is in this. I have come to do thy will. But brethren, his strength is in this, that by so suffering, that which we suffered in the same ways we suffered, becoming like us in every respect, even as we suffered, every respect, even as we were tempted, he is now able to look at us and say, my brother, remember he calls us brothers here, my brother, I felt it. And see, he doesn't have sin, so it doesn't make him less feeling and less sensitive. It makes him more. Why? Because you know what sin does to sensitivity and sympathy? It dulls it. Because the nature of sin is to be selfish, right? When you extract all selfishness from Christ, what you have is the perfect human with the perfect human sympathies. And when he looks at us in our suffering, he is able to help. He's powerful to help because he's able, and by his sympathies, it's his mind to help. He's willing to help. He's constrained to help. But then the question comes, okay, you tell me how he helps. Because I'm in the midst of a struggle. I'm in the midst of trial. Or I just was. And I don't feel the help. Show me how he helps. Show me. Brethren, I'll show you. Here it is. He helps, one, by being asked. You say, where's that in the verse? It's not right in this verse, but it is over in Hebrews chapter 4, where we have a parallel account to this. Look at this in Hebrews chapter 4. Verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize. You see the same thing here. He sympathizes with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect, even with regards to respect to our native weakness, not propensity to sin, but in our native weakness, our recoiling from suffering, from pain. He identifies with us. Yet without sin, let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace. You see what the writer is saying? He's saying, come and ask for help, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. You see what he's saying? Come to the throne of grace, that you may receive the help in the time of need. When you're in the time of need, sometimes you don't get help. Sometimes you look and you say, help didn't come because you didn't go ask. And sometimes it's because we're afraid. You see, like the one I've been using, you're struggling with sexual temptation. But I'm embarrassed. You don't have to be embarrassed. You run to Him and you say, Lord, I'm being stretched here and I don't know whether I can withstand this. Don't be embarrassed. Listen. What are you going to say? Are you going to think Jesus is going to turn you away? Look. If God is just now pressing some cup to your lips that is bitter to drink, is the one who was on all fours in the garden trembling because of the cup that was about to be pressed to his, is he going to look at you and mock you? Is he going to look at you and turn you away? Is he going to look at you and find fault with you? You say, but I'm embarrassed. The things I struggle with are embarrassing. Brethren, look, if it goes through your mind, and the devil will come right there, he'll tell you, he can't relate. But God, under inspiration, is telling you he can. You see, we've got it so much in our minds, he cannot relate to us because he was without sin. He was God. He can't relate. Brethren, everything that we're reading here says just the opposite and is examples. If you don't believe these, then see them out there crying out, desperate, weeping, Father, save me, save me. See him in the days of his flesh. See him faced by the struggles and trials of life out there weeping, Father. See him in the garden. If you don't think there wasn't human weakness there, see him there trembling. See him there quivering. Can you imagine his quivering lip as brethren, what does it take? He says, I am sorrowing even unto death. This is wringing out of him blood like sweat. If you see him there in that, are you going to say, Jesus, I don't think he's going to be able to relate. He did those things very specifically so that verses like this could be written so that you could look at them and say, oh yeah, I think he can relate. So that when you look at that, you realize, and not only can he relate to me like the best Christian, he can relate to me as one who is sinless. And there's no sin there to defile any of his sensitivity towards me. He's bought you with his blood. He is going to come to your help. But it needs to be asked for. No embarrassment. You ask him. You lay him. You look at it. You look at what the temptation is and what suffering in your life is producing it. Where do you feel deprived? What is it that you feel like you want in life that God just isn't giving? Where is their pain? Where is their persecution? Where? Listen, if you trace temptation, you can trace it somewhere. You know, temptation, like I said before, temptation doesn't usually produce suffering. If a guy comes to my door and he wants to sell me heroin, that temptation doesn't really make me suffer. But if I'm already a heroin addict and I'm trying to kick it and I'm going through withdrawal and I'm suffering withdrawal system, the temptation is to go try by sinful means to satisfy that. You see, that's the issue. There are with all of us. There are situations, whether you know, we get in situations, somebody's wronged us, we want to strike back. We've got desires that we want to fulfill. And so we want to go do them and fulfill them our way. There are other ways. We do have choices. But Jesus calls us to walk that path. And the writer's saying, look, you haven't already gone the whole way he's gone. He did it to death. You haven't yet shed your blood doing that. They were weary. And he says, look, he steps in and he says, I know you're weary. But you need to understand this. The help, see, this is one of the things. If we misunderstand the help, then we'll think we're not being helped. Brethren, hear me. Jesus said, in this world you will have what? Brethren, in this world, there are going to be trials. We are told in the Scriptures that anybody that seeks to live godly in Christ Jesus, they're going to suffer persecution. Barnabas came along and he told those saints that day, it is through much tribulation. Brethren, let me tell you this. Suffering is going to come. And see, if you've got the mindset that you've got to be delivered from your suffering or there isn't really help, then you're not understanding what the help is. You say, what does the help look like? I'll tell you this. Sometimes the help is removing the thing you're suffering with. Sometimes it is. Sometimes God totally takes away the thing you're suffering. But most of the time, not. Most of the time, the help doesn't look like that. But the help is there for those who ask. You've got to go through the throne of grace. There's mercy, there's grace there in time of need. You've got to go. So what does the help look like? What do we make of this? Brethren, I can tell you this, that though usually Jesus will not deliver you from suffering, He will take the bite out of it when you go to Him for help. You say, how so? Brethren, when you've got a thorn in the flesh like Paul had, and Jesus comes along to you and speaks to you and says, my grace is sufficient. Wow, that helps, right? I mean, when all of a sudden Jesus comes along and speaks to you, let me give you an example. When I was a new Christian, I was suffering. You say, what were you suffering? I had a friend, Craig. Craig had a family. I had a friend, Rod. Rod had a family. We were pretty tight. I didn't have a family. I would see them with their families, with their wives, with their children. I would drive home alone. Loneliness is a severe trial. You say, how were you helped? Jesus visited me in those years of my life in ways I don't experience now. Oh, I experienced them, but not like I did then. He came to me. His presence was so sweet, it turned my darkness into light. My sister-in-law, Maida, she was suffering cancer, going through chemotherapy. Bitter trial. She was like on a 2-week rotation of chemo. And at that period where she would be most pressed by that chemo treatment, most weak, most suffering, Jesus would come to her. And she actually wept when she was healed, because those seasons would not come anymore. Brethren, that's one of the ways He helps. He comes and He visits His people. I told you this story before. Scottish Covenanters. One of these guys was so mutilated. The Dragoons came in and they dealt like 8 mortal blows to him. They took his broken body and they just threw it on the dungeon floor. And as he laid there, his body broken, he said, "I don't know if I can withstand this any longer." And those bystanders thought he was talking about his wounds. He said, "The presence of Christ is so overwhelming to me right now, I don't know if I can handle anymore." Brethren, one of the ways that Christ helps us is he visits us. The last thing you ever want to do in the midst of your suffering is turn away from your times in prayer and your times in the Word. Because that is so often right where He comes to us. Right? Oh, it was in my seasons when I would go out in those early days and loneliness felt at times like it would crush me. But I would go out in the fields and I would pray. And it was there praying. There were times when I would walk and it was I could feel His presence at my side. I could have reached over and touched Him. And brethren, there's times when he takes the pain of the suffering out. You may know this story. There was a time when Spurgeon, he was suffering the pain of gout, and it was so overwhelming, he had asked the people in the room to leave. And he just cried out. You could just hear it, almost like Jesus there out on the wilderness, just pleading with cries and tears. And Spurgeon there with crying in tears says, "Please." And God took the pain away. No doubt, not all of it and not forever, but He took it away right there when asked. How else does He help? How else? Brethren, sometimes He helps in this way. Sometimes it's in the sufferings that we anticipate. There's a suffering coming down the road like a freight train at us, and we basically are ready for it to hit us, and we're asking God for help, and we're afraid lest we dishonor Him, and bang, it hits us. And it didn't come in like a hurricane, it came in like a spring breeze. My wife can testify to that. She felt like she didn't know how she was going to endure when her mom died. And rather than hitting her like a freight train, it was gentle when it came. How else does He help? Oh, brethren. Brethren, have you ever been in a trial and Jesus comes along to you and says, "I've pardoned your sins"? That helps, right? Does that not help? I mean, no matter what kind of suffering you're in, when God comes along and He says, "But you are forgiven." Amen. Praise the Lord. And that works a lot of good in the suffering soul. I'll tell you what else He does, just like He does to these Hebrews. He reminds them, though you suffer now, there is a city without foundations. Though you bear the reproach of Christ now, there is a reward. That's how, too. He reminds us, your suffering is momentary light affliction in comparison to the eternal weight of glory. That helps. That does help. Brethren, there's real help there. And then this helps. Being reminded, my child, I'm not going to lessen your suffering just now. But I mean to purify you. And I am. This fiery furnace, it's taking the dross out. And it really does. And there's not a one of you Christians in this room that will say, when the sun's shining and birds are singing, sun shining here may be a bad thing, but you know what I mean. When life is good, you don't grow as a rule. It's the hard seasons. It's the suffering seasons. Those are the seasons that draw us closest to Christ and make us most like Him. How else does He help? Well, brethren, there are other ways, and you can search the Scriptures. What happens is, when we suffer, according to Romans chapter 5, when we suffer, it produces endurance. Endurance produces character. When you feel like, man, there's a way out of this suffering, I feel like I can make myself feel better, but it's a path of sin. Do you realize that every time you resist, determined to love God, follow Him, honor Him, obey Him, walk in the path of Christ and not go that way, it produces more and more and more endurance, which produces more and more and more character. You see, that's the issue. What is character? Character is when I don't choose my own way out of suffering. That's you see how that builds together there. Brethren, I'll tell you another thing suffering does that is a help to you. It makes you hold on to this world less tightly. It makes this place not a heaven to you, and that's good. Because the less you hold on to here, the more you have your mind set on things above, the better off you're going to be here. The more you're going to live in light of eternity, the less you're going to live for the things that get stored up here. Brethren, I don't doubt that you can think of other ways. But you know what? This is what I want you to realize. There really is help. There is help to be had. I've tasted it. Brethren, I can remember in those early days, as I was telling some of the brethren the other night, I had never struggled with not believing there was a God the whole time I was lost. As a Catholic, I never even doubted it. Never crossed my mind. Now I'm saved and these thoughts are bombarding my head. There is no God. There is no God. There is no God. I told you this before. I struggled with the unpardonable sin. Then it came right over into struggling with whether there even is a God. And I would be out there praying and saying, Lord, why am I praying to you if I don't even believe you're there? It was just a struggle. But I would just plead with Him, Lord, Lord, please, please, let me lay my head down on my pillow. I didn't ask for full deliverance. Because you know what? Even in those, I didn't expect it. But I asked Him this, Lord, would you let me lie my head down on my pillow each night during this season? And I didn't know it was a season. I didn't know that it might not last my whole life. But I just pleaded with Him, allow me to lay my head down on my pillow each night in peace and faith. And every night when I would lay there, rest and peace. But then the next day the hell would start all over again. Brethren, His help is real. His presence is real. And He wants you to know it. He wants you to know that He cares, He sympathizes, He's sensitive to, He feels. And when you are burdened, when you are hurting, when you are tempted, and brethren, not just when you're tempted before you fall into sin, when you fall, the temptations are enormous. After you fall, right? You fall into sin, what's the temptation? The devil comes right along and says, he doesn't want anything to do with you. Look what you've just done. Jesus, though He had no sin, He feels nevertheless the sorrows. He identifies in that He bore the weaknesses of man upon Himself. He understands fear. Though He may not understand exactly how it is to come out the other side of sin, He understands the weakness that men experience. And even when you fall into sin, what he's saying there is, in time of need, come. You say, but I just fell into sin. That's okay. There's no condemnation. I bore your sin. Come. This invitation to come to the throne of grace isn't just when you've managed to go like 12 hours and 36 minutes without sin, then you can come. This is for all of his believing ones. This is for all of his children whenever there's time of need. And I'll guarantee there is just as much, if not more, a time of need after you've just fallen than at any other time in life. And he beckons you, come. I'll aid you. I'll help you. And brethren, it would be one thing if we came to one who had no sensitivity, but we come to one who, though you may not look into his physical eyes, he's looking at you right now. He knows what you feel, and he feels for you. He is not distant. He is not cold. He is not far removed. He spent his blood. He's saying, I'm sympathetic. This is what makes me the perfect high priest for you. My sympathies for you are perfect. They are acute. They are sensitive. They are on high alert all the time. You just come to me. You come for help. Now, I may not deliver you because to deliver you would not be the best thing for you. And I have your best good in mind. Everything is going to work out for your good. I have that plan there. I am working everything out for your good. And if it's best for you not to take that suffering away, I'm not going to take it away. But I will give you such manifestations of my ability to help in the midst of it to actually be help. I will help you. I will uphold you. I mean, brethren, sometimes when we're in the midst, we cry out to him. It may be him just sending a brother right at the right time. You were down. Here comes this brother. Here comes this sister. They brought you encouragement right when you needed it. I mean, we find that in Hebrews. We're not forsaking the assembly together. Why? Because oftentimes it's right here in the midst of the context of the church that we come in, and when we're struggling, here comes the help. Or it's some providence he sends in life. Just when I was going to take that sinful way out, boom, he puts the block right there. But I'll tell you this, brethren, sometimes he helps us by not putting the providential block. You say, why? Because then we fall. And sometimes that fall is better for our pride than not falling. You see, because he's got overall the best intentions in mind for us. But brethren, there is real help. Real help. From a sympathetic high priest. Oh, brethren, we have a whole book before us that just is going to open up these glories of all of this. Jesus really is able to help you in the midst of temptation.